we're dealing with the fifth chapter. Action in Krishna consciousness. Very important subject matter. Bhagavad Gita is an action book, as we always say. You can look at the cover and see that. Krishna didn't tell Arjuna, you lay down and sleep in the back of the chariot and I'll do all the work. No, Krishna is exhorting us. Fight and think of me. So Krishna consciousness means the art, science, and culture of how to act so that there's no reaction. Explained in a more profound way, Krishna consciousness is the art, science, and culture on how to act so that the senses of Krishna, the all-attractive that we hold, are gratified. Now, no one here can say you don't know anything about sense gratification. Even the baby, the child, children are expert sense gratifiers. They conceive of the world in terms of stimuli for their senses. Now you all can easily see that in regard to an infant or a small child. The sense of the tongue is very prominent. The child likes to take everything and stick it in its mouth. They're very sensitive. Children are very sensitive to nice things that touch them or painful things that touch them. Their whole world is concerned, or their whole world revolves around their senses. Everybody knows this. And they consider it very infantile. As if the adults do any different. A central point of Bhagavad Gita is to understand your level of existence. You have to consider what your senses are doing. Now, Bhagavad Gita will tell you that you have 5 working senses and 5 knowledge-acquiring senses. Now, who knows what the 5 working senses are? The karmendriyas. Karma means action, activity, working. Indriya means sense. Who knows what the 5 working senses are? Anyone? Those are knowledge acquired, Jnanendriyas. Your working senses are your legs giving you mobility, your arms for grasping. Your organs for evacuating as well as procreation, and your mouth for talking. And your knowledge acquiring senses, your Jnanendriyas, as Amay was saying, eyes for seeing, ears for hearing, nose for smelling, tongue for sense of touch, and your skin for feeling things, tactility. So these are your instruments by which you try to deal with the world. Very important to understand that the body means senses. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. Indriyani pranyahu. Prabhupada always stressed that point. Body means senses. Now that sounds like a very simple point, but it's amazing how we don't think like that. The body means senses. Everybody has a particular type of senses. As explained in the 15th chapter of the Gita. Why don't we turn to that? Give us a very good idea of that point. In the 15th chapter, there's a verse where Krishna explains every living entity has a certain set of senses which are grouped around the mind. That's text 9, page 723. Shocham chakshus parshanam cha rasanam rani deva cha adhisthayam anaschayam visayam pasevate. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. he thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. Now, in the Vedic system of classification, the mind is also considered a sense. These days, people think they're very advanced because they are recognizing that the mind exists. But this is still the sensual plane. There's no great advancement in the living entity thinking, I am the mind instead of I am the body. You're still on the plane of the external. You'll find this statement of the mind as one of the senses earlier in this same chapter, where Krishna says, Mamai Vamsho Jiva Loke, text 7, page 720. Manasasthana Indriyani Prakritisthani Karshati. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Manasasthana Indriyani. Six senses, which include the mind. So, we're going over this so you get an idea of what the apparatus is that you're working with. What are your various mechanisms? They're not simply gross physical, they're also subtle, the mind. Now, what are you doing with these mechanisms? That is the focus of Bhagavad Gita. You have to act, you have to do things. Now, what are you going to do with these instruments? Very important point. Now, we're going over this so that we don't become spaced out, or that we escape our spaced out condition. What does it mean to exist? It means to do things with these senses, including the mind. Now, you can act in such a way that you're implicated in material existence, or you can act in such a way that you become free from material existence. And Bhagavad Gita will teach you. There's nothing airy-fairy or theoretical about it. What's the question of dogma or doctrine? How down to earth can you get? You have senses. What are you doing with your senses? There is material nature. Are you implicating yourself in material nature more? Or are you freeing yourself from material nature? What are you doing with your senses? This is a major focus of Bhagavad Gita. You may remember the very first verse of the Gita, Kim Akurvata Sanjaya. Dhritarashtra, the evil king, is asking the secretary, Sanjaya, who can see the events on the battlefield, even though he's not there. Dhritarashtra asks him, what are my sons and the sons of Pandu going to do? Action from verse 1, the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita. And at the end of the Gita, Arjuna tells Krishna, my illusion is gone. I am prepared to act according to your instructions. So, to awaken us, to awaken ourselves out of our slumber, out of our spaced-out condition, we've got to focus on our senses, what they are doing. That is why Krishna consciousness is very practical. It involves the proper engagement of our senses. Instead of in illusory activities, we engage our senses in Krishna's loving service. Now, does this sound in any way like some kind of catechism, religious belief, just memorized and had no ramifications in everyday life? No, this is it's the height of practicality. I have senses. What am I doing with these senses? In fact, Bhagavad Gita will teach you how you got these senses. We just read that every living entity has a certain set of senses grouped around the mind. How did you get that certain set? Why didn't you get another kind of set? For example, Krishna says, going back to page 723, text 9 of chapter 15, the last line of the Sanskrit is Vishayanupasevate. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. In other words, according to the particular collection of senses that you have, you are attracted, or those senses are attracted to particular sense objects. And you've read many times how a human being likes to eat halva, whereas the hog likes to eat stool and garbage. Each one thinks the other's foodstuffs is not so nice. Because the senses of the hog, they are in relationship to stool and garbage, and the senses of a human being, they're related, they're in relationship to different kind of food. But when you're a hog, you think stool and garbage is very nice, because your senses are correlated, that's the word, correlated to that kind of sense object. So, in other words, we are really understanding, as followers of the Krishna conscious science, we're really understanding what sensuality is. It involves senses and sense objects. Particular kinds of senses and particular kinds of sense objects. Foolish people think that a Krishna conscious person has no understanding of senses and sensuality. We know all about it. Krishna consciousness does not deny sensuality. In fact, it deals with the perfection of sensuality. How to use your senses to please Krishna's senses, rather than please the senses of temporary creatures and forms in this world. A devotee is expert at sense gratification, but whose sense gratification? A devotee is expert at gratifying Krishna's senses. And he loses all interest in gratifying his own senses. Therefore, there's a big conflict, a big clash, always between devotees and non-devotees, transcendentalists and materialists. And this clash centers on the point of whose senses should we gratify. Now, under the influence of material nature, you'll think, oh yes, I gratify my senses. This is natural. I mean, this is the way it should be. But is it natural? Bhagavad Gita will teach you different. That the natural thing is to please Krishna's senses. That is why Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. To teach him. Or to revive in him. The original understanding that the purpose of a living entity is to please Krishna's senses. That's not theoretical. You all have senses? Yes. Similarly, Krishna has senses. That's what makes Krishna consciousness exciting, giving pleasure to Krishna's senses. Now, we cannot say that we don't know anything about giving pleasure to senses. If you analyze the lives of people, whether now or in past history, or what it will be like in the future, you'll always find that senses are involved in their relationship with sense objects. Isn't this practical? Very clear. The whole city of Auckland is turning on this principle of senses and sense objects. If you go out and look at Ponsonby Road, it'll be full of people going from cafe to cafe. And that means senses. They'll be eating certain things, drinking certain things, for the stimulation of the tongue. They'll be talking with other people. More action for the tongue and the ear. With the ear, they're hearing some cafe talk. They'll have their girlfriends or their boyfriends, lovers of the opposite sex and same sex there. And they're, of course, hoping for sense gratification in other ways, for other senses. The whole principle is, what's going to become of my senses? When you're working, why do people work? They want money. What do you do with the money? You've got to do something for your senses. Very practical, Bhagavad Gita. And if we can understand it in this way, as it is, we can easily capture the gist or the inner mechanism of what's going on in Maya. My basic mistake in Maya is to think, oh, with my senses, I'm going to act for my own enjoyment. That's the basic mistake. And the whole world is operating under this delusion. Krishna wants to change that. And it seemed a little bit far-fetched at first because we're so covered over. Who wants to give up satisfying one's own senses and satisfying the senses of this mystical, theoretical Krishna? Who supposedly I once knew, but now I've forgotten all about. That is why chanting Hare Krishna is so important. It revives your memory of your original condition. Even in the very beginning, you can tell that chanting Hare Krishna is putting you in touch with something far beyond what your current experience is. That is due to Lord Chaitanya's mercy. As you all know, Lord Chaitanya is that special. You can say Lucy's avatar of Krishna, or Lord Chaitanya, the original personality died, just as Krishna is humanity was. So Lord Chaitanya especially is expert at giving the taste of love of Krishna, even though people don't know who Krishna is. So as soon as you start chanting Hare Krishna, even as a newcomer to Krishna consciousness, an experience beyond what you find in the material world comes to you. Bhakti Yoga, the science of transcendental loving devotional service, means getting to know Krishna again. And of course, there's the illusory energy trying to push you away from your original nature. No, no, no. Take those senses and use them again for your own pleasure. That's the way. You may have had some problems doing this before, but don't worry. Try again. Maya promises. I'll be very merciful to you this time. Just try again. I don't know. I think probably it was before most of your time. But in the States, years ago, they had one TV show called The Three Stooges. Did you ever show that here? Three Stooges? Three fools. I think they survived. And there was a situation. One of the three fools, Stooges, I guess. Literally every 5 or 10 minutes, he would do something stupid. And his mate would say, he would hold out his hand and say, okay, pick two fingers. And so the other fool would pick two fingers. This one and this one. And then the guy would take those two fingers and put them in his eyes. And then 5 minutes later, the guy would do something stupid again. And the other fool would say, oh, you're so stupid. Pick two fingers. And this time the other fool would, I picked this one last time. Now I'll pick this one and this one. And if you pick those, whatever, you pick different fingers, and again. And then 5 minutes later, the guy would do something stupid. And again, his mate would say, oh, you're such a fool. Pick two fingers. And the guy would, he would really think this time. Well, I'll pick this one and I'll pick this one and that one. And of course, so that's what the material energy does to us. Pick two fingers. And we, you know, pick two and we get plucked in the eye, punched in the eye. And then the material energy says, oh, pick once again. You try again. Pick two other fingers. Oh, this time I won't get hurt. We pick two other fingers. You really think about it. We do historical research. We consult the psychiatrist. We talk to our friends. You know, we read some magazines. You know, listen to some music. And, now I know how to do it. I'm going to pick this finger and that finger, and I'll be all right. And of course, McKinley just said, and each time Maya tells you, you just have to get a little more experience, get a little more knowledge. You'll get it right one day, don't worry. Trust me. Oh yes, material energy, I will trust you. Yes. But trust Bhagavad Gita? Well, I don't know about that. I mean, trusting Bhagavad Gita, I just don't know where it'll lead me. Could it be some kind of strange doctrine or just some dogma or due to our pollution, we can't see that Krishna is giving us such down-to-earth practical instruction. We have senses. These senses are related to sense objects. What are we going to do with our senses? If you don't know what to do with your senses, or that your senses are carrying you away, you're busy piling up so much karma. And you're ignorant about that. Oh, another day comes, another night comes. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Oh, gradually I may develop the urge for becoming spiritually realized. But I'm older, when the circumstances are different. But meanwhile, I'm just doing the best I can, you know, trying to make my way in this world. You may think like that, but the laws of nature are active. So intelligent person has to take this very seriously. This world is not designed so that you can just wander through it, naively thinking that you're going to get no reaction. Well, I'm a nice person. You know, I mean, surely nature will take that into account. I mean good to all others. Just like when a child sticks his or her hand in the fire doesn't say, oh, you are a child, I won't burn. Reactions are automatic. The point is, as human beings, we're supposed to know these things. Now, sometimes people say, if Krishna is God, how could he let these things happen to us, all this evil in the world, all this suffering? But Krishna is speaking for the Gita for your benefit. He's giving you the instruction manual for this universe so that you don't get into trouble. But we are very expert in not paying attention to Krishna's instruction. But we are also very expert in taking instructions seriously about everything else. If we get a video recorder or some kind of camera or some kind of computer or a car or something, we're studying the instruction manual very carefully. I've got to learn this, otherwise I could really cause some damage to my new, you know, possession. But to read the instruction manual that comes with this universe? No, no. I mean, you know, it's got some good points here, but I just got to go my own way. This is our duty. Therefore, I'm going to meet a Christmas man. It's your gracious family. All living entities are born in this world, overcome by the dualities of desire. What is it you hate? You hate the instructions of Krishna, Prabhupada's word. And what is it you desire? You desire to imitate Krishna. These are the psychological tendencies of a conditioned entity. You hate Krishna's instructions, and you're very attracted to imitating Krishna. This is our psychological nature. So any questions about these points that right now? Anything you'd like to discuss or talk about? If you can understand this focus of Bodhi, your grasp on Krishna consciousness will become very down-to-earth and practical. Senses and sense objects. What are you going to do? All of you are doing something with your senses. And these senses are grouped around the mind, which is also a sense. So you have to analyze your life. What am I doing with those senses? Why am I acting with my senses? What do I expect to gain or lose? Just watch yourself during the day. See how you're trying to get things for your senses. Get certain objects, get certain stimulations. And then think, is this necessary? Is this the real goal of my life? And then you begin to think, if I'm taking my own sense gratification so seriously, why can't I take gratifying Krishna's senses very seriously? Then you say, well, I don't know Krishna. But you can know Krishna. That's the point of Bhagavad Gita. Through devotional service, you can know Krishna. Now the amazing thing is, you say, I can't really absorb myself in devotional service because I don't know Krishna. But you think the opposite would be true. I can absorb myself in sense gratification because I know myself. How many people know themselves? Yet they're still absorbed in sense gratification, although they don't know who they are. You see the inherent illusions of material life? It's based on such ignorance. Who is this Krishna? I can't really engage my senses in pleasing Krishna, I mean, who knows Krishna? I mean, it's a foreign concept. But let's ask that same question of you. Who are you? Do you know who you are?
Well, it doesn't really matter. The point is, I've got to
leave my senses. This is the gift of Maya, this kind of ignorance. Yes, it's very engulfing, very overpowering. We should develop a healthy appreciation of Maya, a healthy fear of Maya, the darkness of illusion. It's for real. People are covered. Their brains don't work. All right. So let's turn to chapter 5 again. Text 11 on page 285. No one wants to stop here for any questions or any points you'd like to raise? It's very down to earth and practical, isn't it? Yeah. The problem with Bhagavad Gita, though, is it's too down to earth and too practical. It's a hard book to get away from. Therefore, as soon as we find that, as soon as persons who started to practice Krishna consciousness a little bit, as soon as they want to get away from Krishna consciousness, what's the first book they stop reading? Bhagavad Gita. It seems to be a very demanding book. Why does it seem to be demanding? Because it's just it's just so logical, it's so precise. It's too precise. We get so many people who come here on other nights who tell us that real spiritual knowledge is very vague. But if it's too precise, it must be dogma, doctrine. Meanwhile, they're living their lives very precisely in order to get sense gratification. They even study books, how to enjoy my senses better, you know. That's very precise. You notice when it comes to people's own sense gratification, how careful and precise they are? But when it comes to actual spirituality, the vaguer the better. The more undefined, the more spiritual it must be. These are the illusions that are going on today. So you all should educate yourselves how to present Bhagavad Gita to help others. Of course, you have to help yourself first. So now, in text 11, Krishna is going to tell you what to do with your senses. Kaina manasa bhuja kevalaya indriyarapi yogina karma kuravanti sangam chakra mashudaya. Someone would like to read the translation.
We are just thinking of the body, mind, and consciousness, even if it's simply trying to take the purification.
Now let's think about that, really. A yogi. Yogi means one who is striving for connection with the Supreme. Abandons attachment. That means abandons any concept of acting to get certain material results. What does that yogi do instead? Acts with the body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses. Even with the senses. This is underlining it for you. If you look in the Sanskrit, you'll see kevalaya indriyara api. Indriyara means with the senses, you see in the synonym, and api means even. Krishna saying, yes, even with those senses, a yogi acts only for the purpose of purification. Shuddhaya. How does that sit with us? Think about it. Can we kind of get uneasy about that? Do you think maybe it's at the medieval time, Middle Ages, kind of religious thought from the Dark Ages, your senses couldn't do whatever they wanted? Or do we see the purpose of purification as the gateway to real freedom? Just like in the second chapter of the Gita, Krishna called the regular principles of freedom. Now, why is it that when most people hear about the regular principles of fish that constitute, no meat, fish, egg, eating, no intoxication, no sex, no gambling, they think this is slavery. Whereas Krishna calls these things regular principles of freedom. But you see, there's a big disagreement, as always, between what a spiritualist sees and what a materialist sees. Sound okay to you? It makes a lot of sense. There's nothing airy-fairy or abstract or theoretical about it. As soon as we start to focus on our mechanisms known as senses, it becomes clear what we're doing. And by the way, it will teach you how to focus that way so you can catch yourself in terms of what you're actually doing, how you're acting in such a way to produce reactions, or how you're not acting in such a way to produce reactions. Just watch what your senses are doing all day long. What you're seeing, what you're hearing, what you're talking about, what you're tasting, what you're feeling. Where are you walking? What are you grabbing for? And then, under the guidance of Bhagavad Gita, and one who is expert in Bhagavad Gita, understand the purpose with which you're interacting with all those sense objects. The devotee of Krishna is eating, and everybody else is also eating. On Pansami Road, you'll find so many places for eating. Now, they seem to be the same activity, but there's a more than universal difference. That's why Krishna says, the yogi, he's also acting with these senses, but for the purpose of purification. Does that sound painful? To act only for purification? That takes all the fun out of life. What do you think? Really? We're just a small group here. Everybody can speak with me. It takes all the air out of the balloon. Act only for purification. What, did you expand upon that thing? So you're asking, how do you know when something's going to purify you? Yes, definitely need to for that. Krishna's urging Arjuna to fight a war, saying it will purify him. In fact, although illicit sex is condemned, in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Dharma Garuda Bhutesu Kamo Sri Bharatastra. I am sex life, which is in accordance with religious principle. So Krishna consciousness means how to know what satisfies Krishna. So a devotee of Krishna, a bhakti yogi, is one who is dedicated to the art, culture, and science of doing things so that Krishna is pleased. So first, naturally, one has to have a little bit of curiosity in learning this point. Otherwise, we're learning so many things, right? Just like in school you learn, or you learn in the past so many things, right? Yeah. So, this is also learning. But the purpose is different. Modern education is preparing you to satisfy some employer's senses. Krishna conscious education is preparing you to satisfy Krishna's senses. You see, when you look at things in this way, not so cloudy and theoretical. There's nothing more concrete and down to earth than our senses. Now you're sitting on the couch. Everybody. And you're getting a certain feeling from that. That's through the sense of touch. In the background, you hear the traffic, you hear a siren, it's a sense of hearing. You hear my voice, also a sense of hearing. The more you can focus on how having a body means senses and what those senses are doing, the more you get a grip on your situation to be able to do something about it. And of course, perfect spiritual life in the spiritual world also is sensual. In the spiritual world, all the senses 100% act for Krishna's pleasure. In other words, if here in this world, you can act with mind, body, and intelligence just for Krishna's pleasure. Then Rupa Goswami says you're liberated, even though you are existing in this world. You're actually liberated. You're a resident of the spiritual world. These things should make us think. If you're fortunate, you can really grasp this and go far on it. Get yourself out of a lot of trouble. It's like just yesterday, I was talking to one young man, about 27 years old, and every once in a while he comes here. He's not doing anything from a material point of view. He's collecting the dough and wants to play music. And he's dabbled in Krishna consciousness, very slightly, but can't sustain the determination. He has dreams to be a big rock and roll guitarist. One day he was here, then he said he had to leave, that important meeting or something. I happened to be walking up the street after him. I saw him at the old Blue Pot nightclub, and there he was looking at the window and some band was playing. He said, how will this help you? I said, what's wrong with this music? The band was singing some song, sex, drugs, rock and roll, the song was singing. I said, how will this music help you? He said, it just makes me feel good. So he didn't come by for a long time. He came by yesterday and he had gotten into trouble. He got intoxicated with his friend, and somehow his friend convinced him that they should burgle a house. And so, they were casing the house out on the property when somebody saw them and called the police. And a policeman and a dog came, and so this person decided he was going to attack the policeman and the dog chewed him up. They spent 3 days in the hospital. And then, of course, he was arrested for trespassing. They hadn't yet burgled the house, so he was trespassing. And then the police searched his record and found out that he was supposedly on PD, and periodic detention, but he had breached that. And the reason why he got PD was because he had community service before, and he had breached that. So, this is material nature. I asked him, what were you doing with your senses and your mind caught up in all this? I don't know, it just happened. You see, we have to understand the deluding power of Maya. Now, of course, I could immediately see the foolishness of what he had done. And I could think, well, if I was a materialist, I would have never done anything like that. But Maya would have got me another way. We have to understand that material nature is very capable of sealing everyone's fate. So maybe you wouldn't have done what he did under the influence of majority, but certainly you would have done something else. So Some of you should remember, it wasn't too long ago, when you were absorbed in psilocybin, how one thing led to another. You didn't plan on it, just one thing led to another. Or things never turned out the way you wanted. You tried this, and then that happened, and then this, and oh my God.
That's nature of mature energy.
You had one plan and one desire, you start hanging out with other persons, and then, hey, why don't you try this, why don't you smoke that, or take a drink of this, or let's go over here, or, oh yeah, okay, and you just get carried away. So maybe it doesn't lead to jail. Or maybe it leads to some other very difficult circumstance. So we should have great sympathy and understand the power of material nature. How material nature resists our plans and resists our efforts to control it and drags us here and there, regardless of our attempts to decide everything. We have to have a healthy respect for mind. Okay, so maybe you would have never burgled a house. But under the influence of material nature, you would have been pushed into other situations. You know, so many people come here and tell us how they just got swept along into a certain marriage, and then later they realize, how did I ever do that? Before they know it, you know, they've had three kids, and they've got a house mortgage, and this and that, you know. How did that ever happen to you? Yeah, it happens all the time. We meet people coming here and say, you know, they're on their third marriage and they still can't figure out how things are happening. Well, you know, I already been married twice, it didn't work, and I was determined, you know, never again, but somehow, there, you know, it happened again. Power of material nature. People have ideals. I'm never going to work for a corporation. I'm going to do an alternative job, gardening or weaving or something like that. I'll be really sincere and free from the vices of this world. I won't take part in the establishment. And then a year later you see them, oh, what are you doing? Well, I'm working as a secretary for Carter Holt because, well, I really want to see how a corporation works so I can understand how the corporations are cheating the world. I want to see that from within. We hear this all the time. The one girl who comes here, she spends regularly, not irregularly, but at least twice a year, she spends $2,000 a week on various DUE seminars. You sign up, you give $2,000, and then you go to some, you know, get some kind of therapy or group healing or something. Your burdens become lighter. Your pocket is missing $2,000. Your burden's definitely going to lighter. And of course, the main thing at the end of the 7-day sessions is that, you know, everybody hugs and that's the main part of it. Everybody hugs and, thanks to one another for generating the energy. And anyway, so she finished one of these seminars and she came here and she's telling us, I'm going to be a healer. When I was at that workshop, I could just really feel that I was meant to help others to heal them. I mean, I just had that intuition. I got that creative outpouring in me that I should just be a healer. So I thought, oh, great. So she had so many plans. She was going to make up a business card and, you know, rent a little office and put out a sign. Of course, here at the loft, we know that from our statistical research, at least one out of three Kiwis are healers. In other words, there's definitely probably more healers in the country than there are people to be healed. Everybody thinks I'm an alternative healer. So I said, look, you want to be a healer, but in fact, everybody walks in the door here and says they want to be a healer, they are a healer, and you've got a lot of competition. So, I just feel I should be a healer, and I want to be true to myself. Okay. 4 months later, she dropped by again. I said, well, what are you doing? Well, I have a job as a checkout clerk, is that what you call it? At a supermarket. What kind of healing is going on? I didn't say that. What kind of healing is going on? So, the thing is, it gives me a chance to meet many kinds of people and to see how they are. Therefore, it's a good job. I understand. Well, you see, this is how material nature works. Even if we have ideals, they're dragged through the mud. The modes of passion and ignorance. That's another thing you have to become familiar with. Everybody again. How the modes of nature drag us down, even though we may have some higher ideals. How many times have you met people who say, I'm only going to marry for love. I'm only going to have a relationship if there's love. They get a little lonely and, well, like the song, what's love got to do with it? You know, it's a weekend, I need a good time, you know. You think I'm going to be lonely all my life? What's a big deal about a 1 month fling, you know? Anyway, you offer me a trip to the Bay of Islands or something, a cottage, you know? Walk down the street, and this is when you roll in Maya very deeply. You just had a feeling that this whole street is meant for my pleasure. You've gone to a party or a nightclub or you went to a rugby game or just had a feeling that this is just all flowing for me. That experience, right? It's just like magic. Just everything in this world right now is just happening for my pleasure. That's the power of Maya. The reverse is the reality, that everything is happening for Krishna's pleasure. You see how sinister and very perverted the illusory energy, illusory energy's actions upon us are? Everything's upside down. If you go to parties or whatever, everybody's got their kind of style. Some people like parties, they like rugby games, some people like rugby games, they like meetings where they talk about collecting stamps. Or yeah, everyone's got their brand of Maya. So, and just some days you just feel like things are just going my way. When you're with your favorite friends and they're all glorifying you, they're all telling you the things you want to hear, they're all talking about you in a nice way for a change. Or you've got something they want and they're all, oh, aren't you lucky, aren't you fortunate? Oh, really? Your mother's taking you to Los Angeles? Wow, you're going to go to Hollywood and Disneyland? We love to feel like we're the center, and all eyes looking on us. We've got something that the others don't have. We're special, we're unique. The whole world's noticing us. That's upside down from the way things should be. Whereas in devotional service, we're happy when everything is focused on Krishna. And devotees have a sense of that. They're not dreaming. They're not in some make-believe world. They have an appreciation of what life is like when Krishna is in the center. And that's what keeps them going. Reality. And what keeps the materialist going? Illusion. If you're not in the center now, a materialist has hopes. In the future, I'll be in the center. Everything will be focused on me. I'll get this job, and that'll put me in the center. I'll get this relationship, and then I'll be in the center. I'll get these friends, and I'll be in the center. I'll get some money, and I'll be in the center. In other words, everything's going to be focused on me. I'll get to feel like I really count. Things are depending on me. At least one person should treat me like that. And that's, of course, the basis of material relationships. Traditionally known as marriage. Material marriage means at least one person should notice me. And you're going to be that person. And if you don't notice me, you're going to pay, brother. And if you do notice me, things will be kind of nice. And of course, you know, if you don't have that yet, you're longing. When will that day be mine? When one person will really notice me and make me feel okay, when will that day come? This is how the illusory energy is conditioning us and brainwashing us. Or if we're older, you know, in our middle ages, we're thinking, one day I'll really be settled. The Mitchell energy is really going to give me a fixed, stable situation in which everything will happen without much worry, and I'll just be able to look back and see how things are happening right, and I won't have to work too hard, and I'll get some respect, and won't be bothered by so many hassles. And in other words, still you're thinking, one day the mature energy is going to treat me okay. Why not? I'm an okay bloke. The mature energy should treat me okay one day. Krishna consciousness is the reverse. And therefore materialists have a hard time understanding. Therefore we should remember this verse. Kaina manasa bhujya kevalayam jayarapi yogina karma kurvanti sangam chakta ashradaya. The yogi is abandoning attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. So I'm trying to explain this in a way so that we see it's down to earth. It's not far away. This is very near to us. This is life as it's lived. Now let's switch to Srimad Bhagavatam. Now don't think I'm just trying to make these things simple for you. I'm also making it simple for myself. These are things I've thought about for years. Trying to get to the bottom of what's going on through Bhagavad Gita. So I'm also talking to myself. I want to keep myself focused on what's actually happening. Let's see. There's a verse. Tasyaiva Eto Vayate Takovido. I'll look in the Sanskrit index. It was chapter 5, I'm not sure. Let's see. Okay, page 260. As you all know, Srimad Bhagavatam is the graduate study of the Bhagavad Gita. Srimad Bhagavatam takes the concise statements of Bhagavad Gita and expands on them. So, text 18 of the fifth canto, Narada Muni's instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam. Tasyaiva heto prayate ta kovido na labhyate yad brahmatam upayaga ta labhyate tu kavat anyata sukam kalena sarvatra gaviram hasa. To read the translation, Emma?
This is the actual intelligence and philosophical insight. When desire is what physical means, it is not attained even by wandering from top left to top, down the left again to the last point.
Right?
As far as cosmic law, complete enjoyment is concerned, it can be attained automatically in course of time. Just as in course of time, you attain misery, even though you cannot desire them.
Okay. First, let's consider the translation, and then we'll go to the purport. Tasyaiva heto prayate ta kovido. Kovido, one who is philosophically inclined, is related to the word kavi, or scholar. So, if you're an actual scholar, if you actually have brains and you're using them, you should endeavor only for one purpose. Tasyaiva heto. Heto means purpose, it also means a cause. Eva means only or certainly. Certainly only one thing you should try for. And then you get a further qualification in the next line. Na labhyate yat brahmatam upayada. Try for that thing which is not available if you wander from the top of the universe down to the bottom. Now that really pushes away a lot. In other words, it leaves you with nothing material. Don't try for anything, Narada Muni's warning, that you can get within the range of the highest and lowest planets in this world. If you're actually intelligent, you won't do that. You won't try in that way. But wait a minute, everybody's trying. All day long we're trying for certain things in this world. We've been just discussing about our senses, how they're reacting with certain sense objects. Now, Narada Muni is saying, don't try for anything that's available anywhere in this material universe. Think about that. Everybody's trying for something. If I'm slaving in the material world, I'm trying for something. If I'm a practitioner of Krishna consciousness, I'm trying for something. Everybody's trying. I'll focus on that one. I'm trying. What am I trying for? Maybe I'm a newcomer to Krishna consciousness. I'm trying to practice that. Sometimes I feel like maybe I just don't feel like trying anymore. And what will you do? You'll go to the material energy and you'll try, but for what purpose? Everybody's trying. People are trying in the schools and universities. They're trying at their work. They're trying in relationships. They're trying on clothes. Soon they'll be trying on different bodies. Trying out different sense objects. Trying different books, different movies. Trying. But Narada Muni says, try for that which you won't get within this material universe. If you're actually intelligent.
Sarah says, oh, I'm intelligent. I mean, I'm not a genius like Einstein, but I'm intelligent.
I know how to do things. Well, the Bhagavatam standard of intelligence is different. We'll call you intelligent if you're not trying for anything that's obtainable in this material universe. See how practical this is? This is the height of philosophy. I know some persons, they go to the University of Auckland, you know, and they're trying for their degree in philosophy. And the professors, they tell the students, you better have some other thing you're studying here, like how to teach English to people as a second language, because with a philosophy degree, you're going nowhere, and this, you know, there's no way you're going to get a job or anything. I know somebody else who has a philosophy degree who paints houses as a living. Because who cares for philosophy these days? People just want to listen to their listen to their music, talk any silly thing, go to the movies, and the philosophy to seriously think about what they're doing and why, no one cares. Now you might think that a real philosopher is someone who knows how to talk about, you know, so many ancient people from the past. But here, Narada Muni is saying one who's actually a philosopher can be noticed by his lack of trying for anything within the material world. Now you may say, we'll get to the second half of this verse. Talabhyate dukkhavat anyata sukham kalena sarvatra gabhirarambhasa. This is a very famous verse that Prabhupada liked to quote a lot. Those of you who are attracted to learning Krishna consciousness philosophy, it's a good verse to learn. So the Prabhupada would quote it with great gusto. So, we'll get to the second half. Because you'll say, well, wait a minute, you're telling me don't try for anything in this universe? But what about happiness? How can you tell me to stop trying for happiness? That's the problem with you Krishna conscious people. You're trying to put a stop to all happiness. Huh? What is said here? Don't worry. The answer is this. As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in course of time. Just as in course of time, we obtain miseries, even though we do not desire them. This verse takes some meditation on. It's a very profound verse. Do you have a Bible for me? I'm sorry. With page 260. Always let me know if you don't have a book. We're existing just for persons like you. So, what is this point? Happiness will be attained automatically, particularly happiness derived from sense enjoyment, will be attained automatically, just like miseries come even though we don't want them. This is a very powerful point to consider. No one wants misery, yet they come. Similarly, whatever material happiness you're supposed to get is also going to come whether you try for it or not. because of karma. Therefore, the Krishna conscious spiritual masters say very emphatically, you cannot get one bit more happiness than you are destined to get, nor one bit more suffering. All you can do is alter your future. But right now, what you're supposed to get, you're going to get. You can alter your future life. What you're supposed to get in this life, due to your karma, you're going to get. Whether you try for it or not. Now we hear the criticism. This is the problem with India. Fatalism. This fatalistic attitude that you don't have to do anything. It's just, you know, it's all coming from your past life. So members of the Western industrial nations, they like to criticize India in that way. Of course, India is very busy trying to become industrialized like the Western nations. But anyway, they criticize. You people are just going to some rivers and bathing, so-called holy rivers and bathing, or sitting around all day studying your scriptures. Get up and do something. Build factories. Build cars. Become advanced. But you see, the only kind of endeavor is not a materialistic endeavor. To endeavor for your spiritual purification, that's also endeavor. That kind of endeavor, you have freedom. How spiritually advanced you're going to become. But there's no freedom in terms of the amount of happiness and distress you're going to get. That's already promised to you by time. Because of what you did in your past life, you're going to get a certain amount of happiness in this life. Now you may say, does that mean if I just lay down on the street, if I'm meant to be a millionaire, I'm going to be a millionaire? Who knows the answer to that?
Is that how you can hear that you can hear an uncanny gift? Yeah, uncanny sort of thing.
There's no untimely death. Every death is timely except suicide. Suicide, the only kind of death that's not predestined. So like everyone's death is timeless. And then of course, if you become a very advanced devotee, Krishna wants you to stay longer, and Krishna wants you to leave early, leave early. And we're speaking about the general laws of nature. Only suicide is an untimely death. Suicide is not predestined. Suicide means you're illegally and illicitly trying to put an end to death. You can't drop out of the system. Suicide is no escape. So, why is it that you can't just lie down on the street saying, well, if it's in my karma that I'm going to be a millionaire, I'll just lay here and it'll come to me anyway. The answer is that due to your past activities and your karma, you're born under a certain mode of nature. And you just can't lay down and do nothing. You have to do something. Have any of you tried to sit around doing nothing? Does it work? No. Even you thought it might have been a good idea. I'm just going to sit here and do nothing. That would be fun. Everybody else in this crazy world is running around doing this, that. Me, I know better. I know the world's crazy. I'm just going to sit here and do nothing. How long did it last? Right. And then what? You realize I have to do something. So let me do the best thing. Have you tried doing nothing? How long did it last?
A day.
You saw it? Have you ever tried doing nothing? How long did it last?
Half an hour.
John?
I think it's a pretty bad idea.
Harry? What about adults, you know, who they go on their vacation and say, I'm just going to do nothing for 2 weeks. I'm just going to, you know, go out in nature and just do nothing. After a few days, they get bored. They start, you know, where's the beer? Where's, you know, got to find some friends, you know. It's amazing. You know, even people who are like corporate executives who they're working so hard, frying their brains in their corporation, they say, okay, now I'm going to take a trip to Fiji and I'm going to get away from it all. After 2 days, they start talking about their job. I better get on my mobile phone and find out what's going on. I mean, I'm sure they really missed me. And that's why Bhagavad Gita teaches you. No one can stop acting, not even for a moment. So part of your karma is the effects of the modes of nature that reside in the particular body you have. You can't stop acting. You've got to act a certain way. That's why Krishna told Arjuna, if you don't fight for me in this war, what will happen? Who knows? Have you all read Bhagavad Gita completely? You read Bhagavad Gita completely? And you? Yes, that's the partial answer. You're right. That's the minor answer. That's just Krishna trying to use name and fame as a wedge on Arjuna. But the complete answer. You turn to the last chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Find this quickly. Yes, page 844. Chapter 18, text 59. Who can read the Sanskrit? Anyone? Good at reading the Sanskrit? Mm-hmm. Charles, are you good already at reading the Sanskrit? Uh-huh. Okay, the bottom of 843. If you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you'll be falsely directed. By your nature, you'll have to be engaged in warfare. So what is this saying here? What is Krishna saying here? You understand, Emma?
We can't stop acting in order to be direction.
If Arjuna, who is a military man, he has that kind of tendency. If he doesn't use that tendency for Krishna's service, he shouldn't think he's not going to use it at all. He will, because he has to act in that way, but he'll use it for Maya. Just like talking. You can all relate to that. Everybody has the urge to talk. If you don't talk about Krishna, you're going to talk about so many other things, which are no good for you or the person listening. If you don't engage your nature in Krishna's service, you'll engage that nature in Maya's service. See how complete and holistic Bhagavad Gita is? It covers all the angles. Now, of course, there is some value in telling people, thou shalt not do this or thou shalt not do that. But it's much better if you give them a complete, total picture of why they shouldn't act in a certain way. Just like Krishna is doing in Bhagavad Gita. That's why we call Bhagavad Gita the height of philosophy, the perfection of religion. Gives you a complete understanding, the whole picture. Arjuna, if you don't do what I say, don't think that's going to be the end of the matter. You will act anyway, but you'll do it. You'll act under the influence of material energy. Just like I always tell people to come during the week on Friday for our Bhagavad Gita classes. Most of them are guests. Except for Sean. I tell them. Now, try to understand. If you don't want to act on what you hear in Bhagavad Gita, does that mean you're not going to act? Because no, they're going to go out the door and immediately do what? Ask. Try for things. So sometimes we have people coming, we have a young man, young girl, young woman across the street. And sometimes they come here, but then they don't come for a long time. They're right across the street. Why? We just don't, you make us think too much. We don't want to think about these things. She's just graduated from, you know, university. She's working for a public relations company.
We don't
have time to think about these things. We have things we got to do. Things we got to do without thinking. That's why Narayamuni says, Tasyaya Bahato Priyate Kovido. If you're actually intelligent, you'll think, what should I endeavor for? I should endeavor only for something that I can't get from the top universe to the bottom. As far as happiness from sense gratification, it'll come automatically to me anyway. My karma will come to me without even my trying for it. I don't know about here in New Zealand, but sometimes in the States, when people are probably the most fanatical there, when they see sometimes when they see a devotee on the street, they'll say, "Get a job," as if you're not trying to do something, as if you're not working. They don't do that here today. Get a job, like you're not working. You have no purpose. I am working. I have a purpose. A devotee is working. Bhagavad Gita is about work. The supreme work. So Prabhupada would always point out, say, when they have the Kumbh Mela festival in India, where millions of people go to take bath in the Ganges at an auspicious moment, people are traveling thousands of miles through India just to do that. There's so much inconvenience. They're working, but for the purpose of their purification. But materialists can't see that as work. They don't see a purpose for that. Whereas a devotee knows that what they're trying for, they don't get automatically anyway. They won't get more happiness than what they're due. So that should convince an intelligent person not to become caught up in the pursuit of happiness. You don't have to pursue it. It's going to come to you. Now the trick is, I know what you're saying. You're saying I should be a hippie and just get a little house in the country and collect the dole and do nothing. That's enlightenment. No, because you won't be able to live without doing something. The solution is not to try to stop doing. The solution is to do the proper thing. There are not too many of those people around these days, I don't think. Many years ago, they were hippies everywhere. And I'm not material. I've just stopped all material activities. I'm just living out in the country, smoking dope, and just, you know, listening to music. And just, I'm not part of the materialistic society. That's not what Narayana is referring to here. Alright, any questions? We're trying to make this message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam very close to your vision, so you see it's very practical, right up from your eyes. You can't get away from it. Because sometimes people who come here, they get a little anxiety that's just too much close to them. Yes, the way it is. Don't wait till you're old and gray before you take this seriously. It's fun to act on reality. So we're appealing to you all. Give reality a chance. Krishna is the ultimate full attractive of reality. Give reality a chance. So, does anyone have any questions?
Isn't that good? sometimes you hear things that they think too much. So they start to get too much to be sure about where they're taking on.
That's why we're making an effort to educate society in WDC, to teach people what they should be doing with their intelligence. They have no idea. Just like if they would take their thinking powers and apply them to what we've been discussing, they get so much benefit. They've got all that thinking energy, but it's not properly applied. Therefore, they're so frustrated, sad, although they don't admit it. We've all been very sad and lonely, but we don't admit it, right? No one likes to admit that. Isn't it true nobody likes to admit when they're sad and lonely? Right? Just try to keep up. Deep hope in your heart. I'm going to get that right relationship soon. I'm going to get that good thing from society. I'll get a job. I'll get something that's going to happen. Founder Srila Prabhupada wants to train up a class of men and women who can teach people what to do with their thinking process. It's a very noble endeavor. And you all are invited to fully participate in that mission. So what do you think, Terry? Does it sound like something strange? No, it sounds like a natural, normal thing to do, right? Yeah? But what arguments could you come up with why you should do this? Oh, there must be some good ones. We don't put any, she's right, we do not put any artificial impositions on our mind. Therefore, we're not interested in sense gratification. We don't want to put artificial impositions on our mind. And go with the flow? Well, that's described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, the three modes of material nature. So what flow are you going with? Passion and ignorance. We want a different flow. We are going with the flow of loving devotional service to Krishna. So we're going with the flow, but it's not the same as your flow. Krishna says in the Gita, Yayatamam Prabhajate, Tam Sadaiva Bhajandiham. According to whatever flow you choose to go with, I deal with you accordingly. What about you, Sarah? Any arguments why you think one shouldn't take this so seriously?
How can it just like the pitch? I mean, that would have pictures on it, but like, I can't like the pictures on it, I just think. You just get yourself into like all your feelings and stuff, and it's
I have to self to your friend. Okay, so we can look at that in two ways. First of all, your statement implies that you detach yourself from your so called materialistic friends and you won't have any other kind of friends. Secondly, are those people you think are your friends, people you think that they're your friends, are they really your friends? What do they do for you? I mean, I know you understand, you're just bringing this up as a point. So let's just analyze that point. Are they really your friends? What do they really do for you? let's look at that. It's good to have these discussions. We can see things very clearly. Do you notice that? In the association of like-minded persons, persons that's interested in the real truth of life, you can really clearly see things, you know? So, what do these friends do for you? What do you think? What are so-called friends, what do they do for you? Why?
Because
they're funny,
you know.
Yeah. That's funny. I mean, they do stuff, and they bring nothing to them. They bring nothing. They make you what?
Make you feel better.
Make you feel better. Do they tell you who you are that they're making feel better? They tell you what it is that they're making feel better? The point is, a real friend helps us obtain enlightenment. But what we call friends in this world, these persons, they're helping us remain in illusion. Their presence, their association, doesn't remind us of the ultimate goal of life. It simply makes us forget the ultimate goal of life. That's not really friendship. And of course, as you both said, they have some purpose for you. In other words, they help you with your sense gratification.
But I mean, I kind of just do love,
What is this love that they give you? These are good points. What is this kind of, I appreciate you and your point. What is this kind of love that they give you? What is it? What does it do for you? It makes you feel wanted. It makes you feel that you're in the center. It makes you feel that you are the enjoyer. Right? It makes you feel you've got a purpose. That you're important. Right? That's not real friendship. Real friendship is a relationship that leads to enlightenment, to reviving your consciousness of who you really are. Therefore, if you want friends, no problem. In Krishna consciousness, we say, yes, you should have friends, but get some real friends. Persons who will remind you of reality. Otherwise, these people who lead to a more covered over condition, that's not friendship. You just like them because they make you feel good, one way or another, right? Yes? Yeah? In other words, they're good for your sense gratification. That's actually what it is. So-called romance is like that, so-called friendships like that. Mother-child relationships are like that, father-child relationships like that. What are you going to do for me? That's the bottom line of everything that's material world. I know it's covered over with lots of flowers and perfume, but the bottom line is that. What happens when your friends stop doing things for you? Or they stop making you feel good? What happens? Well, they're not your friends, right? Isn't that true? You change when friends stop giving you that buzz, that good feeling, you change them, right? I know people don't look at it in that way. They just, I haven't talked to her in 1 week, or I haven't talked to her in 1 month. But meanwhile, you're busy talking to somebody else. That's the way it works. People don't really think about what they're doing. They change friends. Well, how's so-and-so, your old friend so-and-so? Oh, I haven't seen him in like 2 months. Why haven't you seen that person in 2 months? Because they're just not relevant anymore to your sense gratification. Hey mate, where's your buddy, Tom? I haven't seen him since that rugby game we went to 2 weeks ago. He's probably busy working, and I'm in school, so he's got things to do. It doesn't take too much intelligence to kind of see what's going on underneath all this stuff. What can you do for me? Now, are these relationships making us more enlightened? No. Do your friends tell you, for example, Sarah, you've got to understand you're not the body. They tell you that? They tell you, Sarah, we've got to understand who we really are. Sarah, we shouldn't endeavor for anything that's obtainable from the highest plan to the lowest plan. They tell you those kind of things?
No, that. You kind of, like, I don't know, you just kind of grow with your friends, I don't know, you just kind of, like, learn and stuff with your friends, more than them, like,
that's all right. The principle of friendship is okay. But what we're saying is, make your friends those who will contribute to your enlightenment. That's real friendship. Don't make friends with those who will continue your course of illusion. It's not real friendship. They're not really doing you any good. They help you in your forgetfulness. You know what I mean? I guess that's what friends are really for, to help you forget. Yeah, when I'm with so-and-so, I really just forget, and we just get lost in just whatever silly thing we're doing. Just like when men talk about sports, or when girls talk about whatever they talk about, you know, you lose yourself, you know what I mean? You just, you know, you get on the phone and just chatter for, you know, a long time, or, you know. And of course, the men think that's stupid. Then the men can go on talking for an hour about the All Blacks or something, and the women think that's stupid, right? Everybody has their ways of wasting time. The men get totally lost in sports. You know, I know you girls probably heard men. They can sit for an hour and talk about who the coach of the All Blacks should be and why the coach should be replaced. You've heard that, right? You're like, it's amazing. And the women think, wow, stupid, you know? And then the men hear the women chattering for hours, you know, about whatever they talk about. Wow, stupid. The point is, everyone gets inspired and forgetful, and they call that friendship. But what we're doing here, oh, that's not real friendship. You guys are too serious. But we're helping one another to see the truth. That's real friendship. You see, it just takes a reversal of our peculiarly conditioned concept. You know what I mean? It's not so difficult, what we're trying to explain. But society makes it seem very difficult. So I just hope you remember a few of these points. You think you will? Why don't we go take prasad in friendship? Thank you very much.
I think this is all right.
You all are friends from before? Do you know each other? And Sarah? What's that? Nice family. She's a good friend, then it's a good sister. Namrita? Okay. I did. Oops.
That's a real friend.
Mm-hmm.